guys. I'm just your average Jean. The super doesn't stand for model, but that doesn't mean I'm plain. If all you see is how I look, you miss a super chick within. And that person you Titanic underestimated.
Friday night, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's the Patty Vasquez Show, and how exciting to have Extension 720 and Justin Kaufman and Andrea Darlis. Great conversation tonight with you as well.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun, and I want to make sure before you go, because I know that you get up early on the weekends.
Yes, yes.
You are working this weekend, WGN-TV News.
Yes.
What are you covering?
Well, tomorrow we are going to be at the Family Pet Expo.
Okay.
We are going to be we're going to be doing an interview with the handler for Sailor the Poodle.
Aww.
Who is this famous trick dog, dog who does, you know, pet tricks all over the country. And we're going to be talking to Tony Horde, and he's awesome, Patty. He's with Canine Crew Dogs, and they're all rescue dogs that were homeless or from shelters.
Uh-huh.
And he took on all these dogs and trains them to have new homes, and they're like comfort dogs.
Oh, that'd be great to see.
Yeah.
And time is that? That's tomorrow.
Oh, and there's snakes tomorrow, Patty. Wait, so I'm going to try to stay away from the snakes.
Wait, hold on a second. There's snakes?
At the Family Pet Expo. Well, but people like snakes. That's okay.
Well, see, this actually works out perfectly being St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Yes.
You know, what St. Patrick did was drive all the snakes out of Ireland.
That's very good. Very good tie-in.
Tying it back to you. Yeah.
That's tomorrow at Arlington Park Racecourse. The Pet Expo goes on all weekend long, and we're going to be there tomorrow. And then Sunday at the Southside Irish Parade.
Yay!
Yeah, we're going to be talking to the queen of the parade and interviewing some of the bagpipers with the Chicago Stockyard Kilty Band. So it should be a lot of fun.
And they were great when they were on your show earlier this week.
Yeah, weren't they fun?
They were very good.
Do you do any of these St. Patrick's festivities, either the city parade or the Southside or the Northside parade?
I will be at the Irish American Heritage Center tomorrow.
Excellent.
They've got all the great dancers from all over the city. And you know, those groups, whether it's the pipers, the dancers, they go to every celebration around the city. They're going to have a very hectic weekend. So when you see them, applaud extra.
I will.
Everybody.
Yeah. A big high five.
There you go. So have a great weekend, Andrea. Again, that's the Pet Expo tomorrow at Arlington Heights and the Southside Irish Parade on Sunday.
Yeah. Thank you, Patty. And have a great St. Patrick's Day with your family.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, and get some rest.
Thanks, Patty. See you soon.
And we've got Curtis behind the glass tonight. Now, do you produce Mark Carman and Harry Tynowitz's show as well?
I do, and I produce Dave Plyer.
Oh, dear.
I do White Sox baseball and Blackhawks hockey. I'm all over the place here.
You are. Are we messing up with your schedule at all for sleeping tonight?
No.
You would go to bed late either way?
I'll go, probably a little bit later than normal, but we'll be fine.
It'll be all right.
I'll be fine, yeah.
Excellent. And we are, it's a Friday night. We're going to talk to Susan Dannenberger in just a little bit, find out which wine she pairs with the series One Day at a Time. I feel bad about the fact that we were supposed to do it last week. You know, Curtis, if we had just done Binge and Uncork last Friday, maybe we could have helped save One Day at a Time, which was canceled by Netflix.
That would have been awesome.
I don't think that would have worked. But
probably not.
In my mind, it's fun to hope. Well, here's the thing. If we had done it last Friday and they did cancel it, I would have felt guilty that perhaps we drew too much attention to it.
Oh, you were an influence.
Yeah. A negative influence. So either way, I was going to feel bad about the whole thing.
Well, you live and you learn.
You do.
We have it tonight. It'll be fun.
Exactly. And I'm feeling a little bit, how do I say this? Empty-handed, I guess. I left my phone in the car for a good reason. I didn't do it on purpose, but I was driving here from Waukegan. I opened for Jim Brewer out at the Genesee in Waukegan. And it was, by the way, what a great crowd. And I love Waukegan. They have the best Mexican food at a place called Casa de Samuel.
Ooh, I'll have to try that out.
So good. And I was driving back and I kept looking at my phone, and I got mad at myself because you should not be looking at your phone while you're driving, no matter what. Even if you're at a red light, pay attention to what you're doing. Plus, I was listening to Extension 720 with Justin, so I had no reason, to feel like I needed more distraction. So I put my phone in the glove compartment so I would not touch it.
Go.
Yeah, it's still there. So if anybody's trying to reach me, you'll have to do it through Facebook because I have the computer open. But other than that, I am not incommunicado.
Have you ever purposefully disconnected from your phone or social media or anything like that?
I removed Facebook from my phone for a few days, and that didn't last very long.
A few years ago, I went camping, and unfortunately, my phone broke literally the day before I was supposed to leave, and I couldn't get it fixed in time.
Oh.
So I left it at home, and I went camping with my buddies without it. And I got to tell you, it was actually pretty relaxing just to kind of disconnect, not have to worry about it. You do feel a little empty-handed or disconnected a little bit, because normally everybody's on their phone looking at something. But it was nice to get away and just kind of relax and not have to worry about anything on the outside social media world than just kind of focus on having a good time with your friends and everything.
Did you have a period of separation anxiety that had to wear away, or was it pretty quick?
The first, like, maybe few hours, and we actually ended up leaving a day early on our camping trip because there was a really bad storm that came through, so I used my buddy's phone to get a hold of my parents and say, hey, we're coming home early. So, but no, other than okay. that, after a while, no, I felt just completely relaxed. It was kind of actually nice to just disconnect for a few days and not have to worry about everything.
I should do that. But as you can see right now, I am so technologically connected to everything. There's about six screens surrounding me. And there's a text from the 727 that asks, what's the theme song that we open the show with? That is One Girl Revolution by Superchick. It's one of my favorite songs. So that is the name of the song, One Girl Revolution. And speaking of which, we're going to talk to another One Girl Revolution. We'll talk to Susan Dannenberger when we come back from Dannenberger Family Vineyards to see what she pairs with One Day at a Time for our Friday night binge and uncork. More in a moment on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, enjoying Friday night. So happy that you're joining us as well. And we hope that you're happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. Our text line and our phone number, 312-981-7200. You can text or call us to that number, 312-981-7200. And follow the show on Facebook. That's Patty V Show. You can also follow our guest who's on the line with us right now, Susan Dannenberger from Dannenberger Family Vineyards. Hey, Susan. Happy St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Happy St. Patrick's Day weekend. Cheers.
Cheers. I love that your vineyard is on Irish Road right there in New Berlin, Illinois. So I'm guessing you guys have a...
I know. It's so perfect, right?
It really is. Now, I felt badly. I don't know if you heard me talking to Curtis about this before we came in. We were supposed to cover One Day at a Time last week, and I'm feeling as though perhaps if we did, maybe the terrible news that came down yesterday would not have happened, which is that One Day at a Time was
canceled. Oh, my gosh. Are we topical or what?
I know. It got canceled, and it's such a great show, and I'm so disappointed. What did you think of One Day at a Time?
Okay, so first of all, I'm kind of curious as to whether or not it will really be canceled once, you know, everybody's Twitter feeds blow up and everybody gets upset over this being canceled. I hope it's really not canceled because it's a fantastic show. It isn't even just that it's funny, but it's topical. It takes on big subjects and it makes it feel like you're like, oh yeah, I get this. I totally understand why this is a cool thing.
Exactly. I mean, and some of the things that they dig into, it's just so surprising. It's moving, it's funny, and the cast is crazy. By the way, the lead actress, of course, our very own Justina Machado from Chicago. So, you know, I'm with you. I'm hoping either, I don't know if Netflix will change their mind, but it's possible that One Day at a Time will land someplace else. There's always that possibility for a strong show like this.
And I still can't believe I didn't know this show existed until a couple of weeks ago because it's been out for three seasons.
I know. So I know that I saw that you had a couple. You posted on Instagram the possible wine pairing. Would you want to let us know what you paired with this and why?
So I picked Soleil Noir. So it had to be friendly, but it had to have some spiciness because of the whole Cuban and the Latino thing. I mean, it was amazing to have that aspect added into it. So it was definitely the Tempranillo Blanc Noir that had to go with it.
Oh, I love the sound of that. And that sounds like an excellent pairing. And what was it about that as far as like the sort of attitude of the show that you felt paired with that? Because for those who are joining us for Binge and Cork for the first time, Susan Dannenberger is an extraordinary winemaker. And I believe it was the first time you were even on the show. You and Elliot kind of concocted this idea because you were talking about being at a seminar where they were pairing wine with music and how that, you know, it's sort of tapping.
It changes everything.
It taps into your sensations, right? When you have taste, when you have something that's auditory, but you're doing something that's both auditory, emotional, and visual. So tell us a little bit about that pairing.
Well, so I tried a couple things with the show at first. At first I thought, you know, it's a comedy, it's going to be light. And so I was thinking white wine, and I tried a couple white wines, it didn't work. And I thought, okay, maybe I need to go to rosé. And then, you know, there's a lot of subject matter, so it almost has to take a red to be serious, but it can't be too serious. So I did try, I went, you know, dark and deep for a second with the Sullivan Syrah, and it didn't work. It was just too much. It overpowered the show. It was too much pepper, and the Soleil Noir was perfect because it's super friendly. The show is very friendly. It's easy to, like, slide into and watch to take on these big controversial subjects like LGBTQ and ethnicity and the Me Too movement. I mean, there's so many layers of different topics that we're all discussing right now, but they're brought on, and so you could be kind of sliding into it comfortably.
Right. Oh, I love that. That sounds like a wonderful pairing with that. The Tempranillo sounds perfect.
What did you think of the show?
I loved it. I mean, you're right. I mean, all the different things. And by the way, Rita Moreno is one of my favorite performers, actress, you know, singer, dancer, everything. And you know, her, Lydia, is just, you know, she's just breathtaking. I'm going to be honest. You know, when I was selling my show to ABC, we had hoped that we would be able to get Rita Moreno. So, but, you know, she would have been perfect as my mom. But she was great on this show. And, of course, for those who aren't familiar with the Netflix series One Day at a Time, it is a reboot of Norman Lear's series from 1975 to 1984. The reboot, you know, similar story where it's a newly single mom who is, you know, trying to raise her two daughters. This includes the grandmother on the show. And it's just a really wonderful series that I'm disappointed to hear it's been canceled.
I know. I can't even believe it. I'm really sad. Did Elliot get to watch it?
You know, Elliot was not able to come in tonight, and I didn't want to give him any grief about the series. You know, he's been very busy doing work with the Anti-Cruelty Society, and so he came in to do an interview with the owner and the CEO of Rancho Obi-Wan. Are you coming in town at all for any of the Comic-Cons, like for the C2E2 or the Star Wars Celebration?
I will be. Are you going to be there?
I will be at C2E2. I'm not sure about Star Wars Celebration. Which one are you coming to?
The Star Wars.
Oh, cool. What days are you going?
The second day. I'm going the second day.
Well, you got to check out all the great things. Curtis, are you going to the Star Wars Celebration at all? Oh, I don't have... Well, hold on a second. Why can't I hear you all of a sudden?
There we go.
Hi.
My bad. I will not be there. I wish I could be. I really do.
Oh.
I'm a Star Wars fan. I wish I could be there, but I'm going to have to miss it this year, unfortunately.
Oh, all right. Roger, are you going to the Star Wars Celebration?
Nah, I got work, as usual.
You sound so dour. I have to work. Well, I'm so excited. One more time, let people know which wine you paired with One Day at a Time. And people can find this on your website, right?
Excellent. And Binny's carried Soleil Noir.
It's a Tempranillo, which is one of my favorites. There's something about Tempranillos and Malbecs for some reason are my favorites.
They're approachable and not too intense. Yeah.
See, the complete opposite of me. I am unapproachable and too intense. What wine is that? You always want to have a wine that's approachable, though, don't you?
I don't know. Sometimes I like something that's like way too up there that I'm like, I don't know if I can handle this wine. Syrahs are definitely in that category.
Okay. I'm curious about that because for some reason, like, every once in a while I will like a Syrah. What is it about a Syrah that has that sensation attached to it?
They're very complex. So some people just can't handle, you know, the different layers. And it's like peeling away an onion. It's like, what can you handle? So Syrahs are very, very intense. So you're a Syrah.
There you go, Curtis. If people say, you know, Patty's unapproachable and too intense, you say, well, she is a Syrah after all.
It all comes full circle.
It all makes sense. Well, mm-hmm. I love it. Now we have to pick an episode for our next Binge and Uncork. And I've been hearing there's a series that I've never watched on Amazon that I think maybe we'd both jump into, unless you've already seen it. It's a series called Catastrophe. Have you seen this one?
It's on my list.
Oh, there you go.
I just heard somebody talking about it today.
Oh, perfect. This worked out perfectly. Yay!
Yay!
So,
okay, cool.
Our next for everybody, the assignment is Catastrophe. It's a series on Amazon, and I believe it's got at least, what, about 3 seasons? I'm not sure. It started in 2015, so I don't want to give people too much work, but, you know, at least a few episodes in so we can talk about it next Friday night when we do our binge and oh, you know what, Susan, I'm going to be off. I'm going to be off for 2 Fridays. So so we've got plenty of time now to watch Catastrophe.
I'll see you in April.
I will see you in April, yes. And let people know, where can they find more about Dannenberger Family Vineyards?
You can go onto social media or our website, Dannenberger Family Vineyards, DFE Wines. Either one works.
Excellent. Yay. Well, happy St. Patrick's Day and cheers, Susan. It was so great to catch up with you and talk a little wine and one day at a time.
Happy to talk to you. Go Irish.
Go Irish. Talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.
All right. Good night.
Bye. More after this on 720 WGN. When we come back after the news, we'll catch up with Mike Turner, the deputy mayor of Woodstock. It is Friday night. We are heading into St. Patrick's Day weekend with a lot to talk about. And I, you know, earlier, Justin Kaufman was talking about, you know, the neighborhoods of Chicago, and he'll be doing new segments in the neighborhood. Tonight he did Englewood. He'll be featuring places like, you know, Lakeview and Logan Square and Jefferson Park. And we, you know, that's the thing about Chicago and the Chicagoland area. We are made up of so many great communities. It's wonderful to hear stories. And one of the good friends of the show that we've loved learning more about Woodstock with is the deputy mayor of Woodstock, Mike Turner, joins us in studio. Before I have accidentally promoted you to mayor, and I've got lots in my head now that you are the deputy mayor.
Yes.
But we were having a conversation at my house today, and we were wondering, does that mean that should the mayor of Woodstock be unable to fulfill his duties, do you step into his shoes, or is there another process involved?
There's another process involved.
I thought so.
And we don't expect or want or ever have that to happen, but the purpose of I think at any board, they can be called a variety of things. Deputy mayor just means that if the mayor is unable to, you know, attend an event or, okay, you know, primarily the official things like city council meetings, that you step into that role. And then there's an assistant deputy mayor. But it's not like a vice. It's not vice president. It is, okay. There's not a succession line.
So. That's what we were talking about that because we were kind of curious about. We were talking about Mayor Washington when that all went down. And we're trying to remember what that process was like. So tell us, first of all, where did you grow up, Mr. Turner? Deputy mayor.
Oh, I am. So primarily in Minnesota.
Oh, really?
Yes. And went to high school in Minnesota. Went to college in Wisconsin, in Madison.
Oh, what a great school.
And a few places since there. And and settled here in 96.
And what's your you know, area of expertise? What field did you go into?
It's painfully boring. I am a business major in insurance and finance, and I work for a large insurance company.
Okay.
So, yeah, that just, you know, that probably classifies me someplace for some folks, but, you know, somebody's got to sell it and somebody's got to do it. And, you know,
it comes from somewhere.
There's a need for it, right?
Someone's got to know that stuff.
That's right.
No doubt about it. What led you to the office of deputy mayor?
So that's, yeah, that's, I think, kind of an interesting story. So, you know, I'm just short of 40, and, you know, got the world by the tail for the most part, and don't need any other hassles or anything else. I got two great little kids at the time, and a, you know, great wife and a great life and friends. And the existing mayor at that time and some folks on council were they were making some decisions around which often happens on a piece of property near my house and other people's houses, and we didn't care for the decisions that were being made. And we confronted that in an appropriate, correct way. And, you know, for future segments, how we did that, I think, instead of pointing fingers and screaming about it, as we went through a process and we were firm, fair, but very clear as to what the objective should be. Anyway, long story short, they backed down. And, you know, I had people urge me to say, you know, that might be a nice role to have you at the city. So I ran in 05 and was fortunate enough to win, or unfortunate, depending on how you classify that. But yeah, so that's how I ended up there. So,
well, you can tell us the process. I mean, was it first? It's getting involved, finding. Well, first is learning what the process is, because you know, during Justin's show, he was talking to a guest, and you know, people have all these ideas, and they're angry about you know what's going on in their community, and a lot of times, you know, people start yelling at their aldermen, and the aldermen are like, "All right, you're upset about this thing. When did you call about it? When did you voice that concern? I can't just know about things spontaneously."
Well, and that's true. So, you know, probably that doesn't happen enough today, frankly. And you know, you have an issue. You have to understand, first of all, there's probably no perfect solution, especially in government, because there's probably not enough money to do exactly what you want it to be done.
Right.
And there's probably not enough support. 5149 is not enough to change the direction 180 degrees.
Right.
Okay. The art of compromise and understanding and trying to come to an agreement is an important element of life, mm-hmm. not just politics. And so we approached the city about what we saw going on this piece of property, organized a group of neighbors who had similar thinking, and then we held meetings with the city. They were not the political leaders. The mayor at the time was mm-hmm. not the current mayor. You know, they didn't listen very well. So we went to the next step, which was simply to formalize our request, and we came up with some solutions. We came up actually with some monetary solutions to help take this piece of property out of the process, give the city a little bit of money, mm-hmm. and make all the neighbors happy. And it was a really brilliant solution. And the group of us that led that, you know, were very satisfied with the outcome. I think the neighbors were. And it was a good permanent thing, required compromise, an approach, and, you know, and reasonably minded people to, you know, to take action. And that's missing today.
And now that you're on this side of it, do you see people, you know, continuing that? And not everyone's going to participate. Not everyone's going to get, you know, involved or want to show up at the meetings and be persistent. I mean, this is also, it means you have to show up and put in the time and the effort.
It does. But sometimes the show up part in current, you know, on both sides is lobbing things through Facebook or mm-hmm. social media. And that, you know, it's I'm not completely down on social media. I like it. I use it. And it can give a good sense of things. And that's good. Mm-hmm. I like that. But, you know, it doesn't produce solutions necessarily.
Right.
When there's issues, you need to be ready to bring them forward, be open-minded enough to listen to both sides, and then work out a compromise or a solution that can potentially work.
When I've been out to Woodstock, it struck me by how much, one, everyone seems really happy there, and not like mm-hmm. in a sort of pod people way. You know, it's not like that. But there are people that have either lived there their entire lives and love it there. People who've moved back there, like the folks that run the
Cherry Tree Inn.
Cherry Tree Inn, right? He moved back here with his family to take it over. Then I've known people who said they moved there 7 years ago, best decision they've ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just seems like people who are invested in their community. It was something that struck me.
Yeah, well, you read my mind, because vesting, okay? Yeah. Are you vested in the outcome of where you live and what you're doing? Doesn't mean there's not differences of opinions and that there's not folks that maybe aren't as happy with, you know, with tactical things, conditions of the road, stuff like that, especially this time of year. But I think that there's a sense within the community, there's a sense for who we are,
mm-hmm.
whether you've been there since you were born or whether you, you know, or whether you're a transplant like I am. There's a sense for who we are, a pride in it. And then, you know, the discussions about what are we going to be, you know, and those are fair discussions. And that gets into the political process as to, you know, what does growth, if it's going to occur, look like? 25 years ago, there was a pretty staunch group against growth. And, you know, there was those that were pro-growth. And so that battle's the wrong word. That process of working out what direction we go in had to occur and occurs in the political process. It's not idyllic, but it's a fantastic community, and you know, and there's pride in it. We work to make it better.
Well, let's talk about when we come back what's going on in Woodstock and what events you have coming up and some wonderful things coming to Woodstock. We're hanging out with the deputy mayor of Woodstock, Mike Turner, and we are taking your calls and texts if you want to join us anytime, because this is your conversation. Curtis is behind the glass. Be nice to him. It's just, right? I mean, what's the point? sometimes you get the folks on the, you get those calls, don't you, sometimes, Curtis?
Yeah, and but here's the thing. If you're nice to me, I can put you on the air.
Yeah.
So if you're nice to me, you're going to get on with these guys.
That's what I'm saying.
It benefits everybody here.
It makes everybody happy. There you go. 312-981-7200. And if you'd rather text, you can text the same number. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. Woodstock is a short ride on Metra. From my door to Metra, if you go to Woodstock, Illinois, I can get there in less than an hour because I'm just right by the Gladstone stop. So it makes me very happy to just get on the train and head over to Woodstock. I did it several times last year because we had an incredible event. There's always so much going on at Woodstock. The farmer's market, the car celebration, all kinds of things. Music at the Opera House, performances, you name it. What do you got going on, Deputy Mayor Mike Turner? What are some of the great things that you want to highlight?
Well, we just came out of our, you know, kind of our flagship event, which is Groundhog Day.
So, oh, that's right,
you know,
of course.
That went very well. I mean, since we've been promoting and doing the things with our Real Woodstock campaign, it's, you know, it has helped to grow that, and the volunteers who put time in and have been for 20 plus years on that do an outstanding job. So we enter this period, much like the weather, where we're begging for something to do. So
yes.
The couple things coming up tomorrow, in fact, this event called Shamrocked, which is a Benton street party.
Okay.
It is in a heated tent, okay, although the flaps can be lifted up, I'm sure, if it's decent enough weather.
It won't be. But go ahead.
It probably won't be. 11 in the morning to 11 in the afternoon, heated tent, bands, beer, food, great, just a great kind of, you know, great kind of chill event. And the best news maybe is it's right across from the Metra train station. So you are,
there it is.
You are 1 minute from off that train.
Wait, well, how late does that go?
11 o'clock.
Oh, I'm going to be in Aurora. Is Woodstock a stop from Aurora?
No, that's a different line. That's the west.
It's Crystal Lake.
Union. Crystal Lake's on ours.
I'm saying Crystal Lake's on yours. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I was trying to put them together. Okay. So, yeah.
So we're on the Union Pacific Northwest.
All right. So until 11 o'clock tomorrow night, you can get shamrocked.
Yep. We got a concert coming up with Garnett Rogers and Chris Matthews. Garnett is a Canadian folk singer, and Chris is kind of an up and coming talent who's out of Washington, D.C. That's coming up at the Opera House later in March on the 24th. Jimmy Webb is kind of been dubbed as America's songwriter. He's written songs for hundreds of artists, Glenn Campbell, Art Garfunkel, Johnny Rivers, Fifth Dimensions. His songs include MacArthur Park, Up, Up and Away, Galveston. I mean, these are, you know, again, if you're into older music, but this guy's had a heck of a career, and he's going to be performing at the Opera House on April 27th. Something really cool coming up is that our own Opera House director, Daniel Campbell, has come up with and is now joining National Theater Live.
Okay.
Which is, it's an effort by Britain's National Theater, Canada Stratford Festival, and Moscow's Bolshoi to do live feed theater across the world.
That's wonderful.
And so in the Opera House, mixing old and new, mm-hmm. we're going to be doing, you know, a viewing of live theater as you sit in a 150-year-old, you know, theater. That's pretty cool. And so that series starts with Frankenstein on April 20th. It includes Macbeth, King Lear, Anthony, Cleopatra, and it runs through September. So
great idea.
Yeah, realwoodstock.com will get you to the Opera House and get you to those shows. Really worth looking at. It's kind of cool.
I love that idea. And the Opera House is gorgeous.
It is.
For those who've never been to Woodstock, if there's one place that, you know, it should lure you, it is the Opera House, which of course, you know, featured strongly in Groundhog Day.
Yes.
Quite a bit.
Yes.
And was where Orson Welles studied for.
That's correct. Yeah, Orson Welles spent a great deal of time in Woodstock, and is kind of one of our claims to fame.
I love that. And Dick Tracy, the creator of Dick Tracy, is from Woodstock.
He
as
is,
well.
He spent his time just outside on a farm. And Dick Tracy is, you know, Dick Tracy's history and actually the things that were in that script
uh-huh.
were quite predictive of things that have actually occurred, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You know, little devices and all the little things that were part of that. So, you know, and the characterization he was doing was far ahead of his time. One of the great things we have in Woodstock is a mural, brand new mural that that depicts Woodstock, famous people from Woodstock, and Woodstock in film. And so, obviously, Groundhog Day, Bill Murray's there. You've mm-hmm. got, you know, Ned, you know, Stephen Tobolowsky, his picture. Right next to the restored movie theater is this mural. It's fantastic. Great, yeah. great thing to see.
It's very cool. By the way, Dick Tracy's the movie that needs to be remade and remade
it,
right.
Actually, you know what? You're right. It yeah. would be, and yeah. it would kind of, it could be very insightful. You bring it to today's time.
It would be so much better. Warren yeah. Beatty did not. That was not.
Yeah, that was.
And Madonna.
That was weak.
Woof. Woof.
Yeah, that was really. That was really weak. It was. Yeah, it's a bad, strange casting. Wrong time. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. with the CGI stuff and the things they can do now, and I think more inventive exactly. storytelling.
Yeah.
I think it would. I think that's got potential.
Yeah, we got Curtis. Can you get someone on the phone who can help us get Dick Tracy made?
Well,
Curtis is like, wait, oh,
hey, you've got some scripts. I heard you've got scripts in right now, so yeah. maybe
I'll just call Hollywood on speed dial.
Yeah, could you do that for me? Yeah, could you get? Yes, I think that's I believe we have that number already. You know, in the you're right
in the contact list.
In the contact list, Hollywood, just general Hollywood.
Yeah, I'll okay. give them a call. See who yeah. I can get.
I think someone's up. Someone will answer the phone.
Yeah, it's what 8:54 there.
Yeah, something like that. What else you got going on? I know that we have some great events coming up. We did Laughstock last year. Can we talk?
We did.
Time yet to talk about Laughstock?
It is time to start planning and talking about that.
We did our very first. You guys are doing it on my birthday again, I think.
Are we? Because I have to admit, not knowing the exact date, but no, we're ready to do it again.
Yay!
And it had great response from folks that that went to it, and it had a buzz for those that didn't go, but
yeah.
talk to people who did. So I think we got something building there. I know we do, and yeah. I think that we want to keep that going. And we want to find ways to, you know, expand, enhance, and make it work, yeah. continue to work and make it continual. So we're definitely going to keep looking at that.
Perfect. Yeah. I love that. And I know you've got a lot. We were talking about Ethereal moving. They're still building their new space. If people haven't been to Ethereal, it's my favorite chocolate fantasy world.
Yeah. This is not just some run-of-the-mill business or, you know, not that they're all, and I'm classifying any business as run-of-the-mill, but it's not just somebody throwing out chocolate. This is a business that, you know, the manner in which they select, refine, manufacture, and create their candies, and then as a chocolatier, and the way that they ship worldwide, the following that they have, and what they're doing now, moving into this new space, is extraordinary. I mean, it's going to expand their operation. It turns it into a destination more than even it was.
Right.
They're going to do a speakeasy in the basement. And talking about a patio on the top, and it's right on the square. So we see it as a center point, another center point mm-hmm. to reasons to come to Woodstock.
You have so many. I mean, all the businesses. There's shops all along that beautiful, city center where they're, you know,
square.
Whether it's the square mm-hmm. where they have, you know, whether it's art, you know, artists who have their, their wonderful pieces of work for sale and boutiques and, you know, was there a memorabilia store? I'm trying to think. There was like. You're like, you don't know all the businesses. Name all the businesses on the square.
thanks,
Mike Turner. No,
all right. Well, that's the end of the deputy mayor position.
I'm teasing you. Great restaurants. There's just so many great things to see.
So something else to mention on that. We as a city have put a great deal of effort into a downtown business plan. Mm-hmm. And it has been finished, polished, and is ready to go. What is very unique about Woodstock is that we have some substantial properties. If you look up and down the train line, you will not find another city, I dare say, that has the kind of available development space for residential and commercial retail mix like Woodstock does by its downtown next to the train station. And our city staff is taking calls, actively promoting it. And as a councilman and as a resident, probably more important as a resident, I want to see that infill. I want to see development. I want to see some good, smart, great-looking things that put 1,000 new people downtown so that we go to the next stage.
If you're looking for somewhere to start something new, it sounds like Woodstock might be the right place. Let's take a break here. We're going to keep Deputy Mayor Mike Turner for our Finally Friday panel coming up after the news at 11. More on The Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN.
It's good to be king. To be there in velvet.
know this one. hold on. Curtis, are you familiar with... I don't know the song, but you're Deputy Mayor.
Wait. What do you mean you don't know the song? He literally just said the name of the song.
I don't know the name, but I'm going to say it's Tom Petty.
Yes!
Yeah, okay, that's
very good.
Okay, yeah, what song is it?
It's Good to Be King.
Okay. I believe you. Hi, Ken Jacobowski on the line. I don't know if... are you appalled by how much I don't know about music, Ken?
I thought that was the Beatles.
So you're saying I'm in good company?
Yeah, I figured that was the fifth Beatles singing lead on that song that we had never heard before.
On the line with us is Ken Jacobowski. He is the president and CEO of Cirrus Enterprises. We have in studio with us Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications, regular contributor here to WGN Radio. Good friend of the show. Well, they're all friends of the show. Deputy Mayor of Woodstock, Mike Turner. And on Friday nights, we take all the big headlines of the week. I typically stay away from it all week long. People get exhausted. They want to, they don't want to hear about politics all the time. We talk a little bit of legislative stuff with our state legislators. We talked to Representative Sarah Feigenholz last night, Representative Mark Batnick, one Republican, one Democrat. Make sure we cover a lot of territory and what's going on in our General Assembly. By the way, you're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN, and we're happy to have you here. You can follow us on Twitter at Patty Vasquez CHI and call or text anytime, 312-981-7200. And I was asking the guys, Ken, about what they wanted to start with, and there's a lot of stuff to cover. I do eventually want to get to the college admissions fraud, the biggest, number of charges in an investigation like this in the history of the United States. I want to talk about that. We want to talk a little bit about Manafort and what's going on with the day that he was sentenced, and then also these charges from New York City, some state charges that are not, pardonable by the president. So that's interesting. 312-981-7200. What stories grabbed your attention this week? And we'll try to get to them. Ken, we were thinking the mayor's race we might start with, because Jasmine's going to call in at 11:15. We're going to talk about Trump's budget and her thoughts on that. So before we get into the national news, the Tribune has now endorsed Lori Lightfoot. The momentum seems significant when it comes to Lori Lightfoot. Do you guys think that there's anything else that could slow this down, slow this train, the Lori Lightfoot train down?
There's always something to slow it down. Okay. I mean, it's politics. Anything is possible. That said, Lori Lightfoot, I was concerned that if she got, well, as you know, I predicted she was going to get into the runoff, but I was concerned that if she got in the runoff, that she'd run up against this freight train of the entire Democratic organization, the labor unions. She had a lot more money, and that it would be a real problem for Lori Lightfoot. But what's turned out is that the inherent distaste that so many people in the city have for Tony Preckwinkle is meaning all the momentum's on Lori Lightfoot's side.
Yeah, people seem drawn to Lori Lightfoot.
The overwhelming majority of the endorsements are on Lori Lightfoot's side. A lot of the businesses are going to Lori Lightfoot. I was talking to a friend who hosted a fundraiser for her yesterday with some very senior-level CEO types in the business community. And she impressed them. She impressed them. And her pitch seems to be, look, Chicago has had a history of corruption. I am the one person who can, and that's been a problem in attracting businesses, is because of the corrupt nature of Chicago, at least Chicago government. I'm the one person who nobody sent. And I can turn them away or turn that around. And it seems to be having an appeal.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think she's going to win by pretty comfortably.
It seems like it's headed in that direction. Ken, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Dave 100%. I mean, I'm sitting here drinking a soda pop, and I didn't pay extra tax. I'm very happy. I think Tony Taxwinkle really only has herself to blame for this, for the way in which she's been her tenure as Cook County president. I mean, it's just... Yeah, it's been an abomination, and I think people have seen through that. I think it's a complete repudiation of her tenure, and I believe that to some extent people want to start completely fresh. And maybe the Ed Burke stuff also has impacted a little bit, where people have decided that we just want to start fresh.
I just have trouble with somebody who has had no experience when it comes to a job like this. And I understand a lot of people are doing that. We have J.B. Pritzker, Rauner did it, Trump is doing it. I'm not all in on either one of these candidates at all in any way. For me, at least, Preckwinkle has a lot of executive experience. She obviously has worked in City Hall for a long time. I know that's what people are saying counts against her. But I don't know. I just don't see starting with the biggest job in the city of Chicago, one of the biggest jobs in the country. I just don't. I have a problem with that.
Well, I mean, look. I think it's fair. I think your point is, your criticism is fair, and I think that people are looking at this race saying, "Hey, Tony Preckwinkle has got a lot of executive experience. We've seen what that looks like. We don't like it." And I think, in fairness to Tony Preckwinkle, and Ken, I think you were being a little bit unfair. In her first 2 years, Tony Preckwinkle did a fantastic job. She did a lot of great work with the county health systems, which were in disarray. She did a lot of great reform efforts. She was very focused on cleaning up a lot of the messes that the Strogers had left for her. And it was great. And if that was the Tony Preckwinkle running today, she would win in a walk.
Were it not for just the soda tax?
No. It's not just the soda tax. It's not just Ed Burke. It's the running on a platform of cutting taxes, cutting them, and then, after you've been reelected, raising them again, doing it in a secret fashion, doing the same thing with the soda tax, lying about the soda tax. It's not just Burke. It's Burke. It's the machine, the fact that she took over the machine functionally. She is the machine. And, you know, I have a friend who explains why that's a good thing. She can get stuff done. But it turns out things she's gotten done are things that she doesn't like to talk about and doesn't like to disclose in public. And it's just enough already. I think the city of Chicago wants change, and that's why they're gravitating towards Lori Lightfoot.
What do you think, Deputy Mayor, watching from Woodstock, our drama here?
The size of this city and the complexity, when you talk about running things, that gets lost at times at every level, at this level, national level. Running things is an incredible skill, unbelievably important. And if you want to spend 12 months on OJT, on the job training, you can really find, you know, your city, your company, whatever it is, not in good shape. That having been said, if you develop competence and learn how to hire and manage, then you can get people to do that for you. And if you're an outsider coming in, you're in a lot better shape, you know, in the current political environment anywhere, than if you're inside, in the machine, in the swamp. That's not the place to be right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that when you look at the jobs that Lori Lightfoot has done, she's done them well. She has attracted really, really smart people to work with her. I know some of those people. They're very, very impressive folks. Look, I think that if she's elected, and I believe she will be, Lori Lightfoot will be the single most disruptive force to hit the fifth floor of City Hall ever. And I include Harold Washington, and I include Jane Byrne in that. I just think that the throwing the machine on its head is just going to create disruption. Now, disruption in the tech, I come from the tech world. In the tech world, disruption it can be great. It can be bumpy, and I expect that the first year of a Lori Lightfoot mayoralty is going to be a really bumpy ride. So buckle up, campers!
Right. What are your, Ken? Before we go to the break, any last thoughts before we leave this subject?
I'm not without my concerns, and the experience factor, and I think to some extent the way she's approached this campaign, it gives me a little concern, but. You know, I think it's worth the risk. My hope is that she's smart enough to surround herself with really smart people, not just on her staff, but as advisors and people who are experienced. Disruption can be good in certain areas, like technology, not always really good in government. And I think we're gonna see what happens. You know, she is constrained by incredible debt. And all sorts of fiscal issues. So it's going to be a challenge, but I certainly would prefer that as opposed to Tony Preckwinkle any day of the week.
Mike. You can gain a lot as a leader mm-hmm. by knowing what you don't know. Okay? Know what you don't know.
And know that you didn't know it.
And know that you didn't know it, and don't pretend it, and don't fake it. Know what you don't know, and fill in those gaps. Again, mm-hmm. no matter what you're running, you know, that's necessary. And to come into this job, if she does that, and she has, I think that first year could be less rocky.
It's what I call the ultimate test of wisdom, is knowing what you don't know.
You know,
absolutely.
There was a weird moment, and I saw this on firefighter Todd Chuchuk's timeline yesterday. He had posted something about a firefighter had saved a ComEd worker's life, and Todd had posted, this is why we shouldn't be closing firehouses. I didn't know that was even a thing that people were talking about. So there's a link to an interview with Mike Flannery from Channel 32 talking about how, well, don't you think that we have too many firefighters? You know, not a lot of people are dying from fires. You're like, well, there's a reason why people aren't dying from fires as much as they used to. It's because we have an extraordinary fire.
That's a really dumb question.
And he wouldn't let it go. And Lori Lightfoot's like, I don't think we need to start there. I thought, where did that even come from?
That's weird.
It was bizarre and
that's just weird.
Unnecessary. All right, let's come back with more bizarre and weird if we can. More in a moment on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We'd love to hear from you. And you know what? 312, I will read your text when we come back if we get a chance about how it doesn't matter who it is. If it's a Democrat, things aren't going to get better. So we can talk about that too. More on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Friday night, and we are so happy that you're joining us. This is the Patty Vasquez Show. We would love to hear from you anytime because this is your conversation. 312-981-7200. Curtis is behind the glass, and he'll be taking your calls. Curtis, can you put Ken back on the... I know I left his phone line open. Ken, I think we could hear you breathing during the commercial, so we had to...
Uh-oh.
He's allowed. He's allowed to breathe, but it's just that we... Oh, no, we lost him altogether.
We lost Ken.
See what happens. Ken has to call back.
Please. You killed Kenny. You sorry.
And Jasmine should be calling in shortly. She wanted to talk a little bit about President Trump, and we could talk. I guess we could start with the vote to. Okay, he made an executive order to declare an emergency on our southern border. That we need to. He wants in order to be able to release money to continue to build a wall. Now, did I? Okay. Let me start all over again. Can you cut that in editing? I was with somebody tonight. I was hanging out with a comic who told me that he watches no news, reads no newspapers, has absolutely no idea what's going on. Because we sat down to eat, and I was like, so what do you think of this? And can you believe that, you know, 12 Republicans decided to cross party lines and vote against, you know, President Trump? He goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. I was like, okay, how tragic, you know, this shooting in New Zealand is. Like, he goes, yeah, I heard something about that on the plane, and someone was saying that it was President Trump's fault, and somebody else said, no, how can you say that? And he goes, I don't know what they're talking about. And I thought, what is that kind
Patty,
of...
Patty, I don't understand.
I don't know if it sounds magical, or...
No,
you guys don't think...
No, an uninformed populace is not magical.
But it was interesting, because I haven't met anybody, because, you guys are, you know, kind of in the same circles that I'm in, people who are, you know, participating and want to talk about these things. Obviously, having a radio show, I kind of have to have some idea of what's going on, and have an informed conversation to the best of my ability. But there, it was interesting because he goes, you know, it almost sounds like he said, she said at some point when he hears people arguing about what's going on in the country.
Well, that's because he doesn't pay attention. I mean, if you're ignorant, then you can't discern between two different people making an argument.
But there was a purity to him not being mad about anything.
That's not pure. That's a cop-out.
I was like, he doesn't, he's not mad at anyone.
Lack of knowledge is not pure.
We have bipartisan agreement on this right now.
Yeah, see?
Isn't that tough to get? These days.
No.
I was fascinated. He said his sister-in-law she told him that she was going to do a march, and he was like, oh, what are you marching for? She's like, oh, it's the women's march. He's like, okay. So what are you marching for? And he's like, are they taking your vote away? Are they... was just making fun of her. I was like, wait, see, it's just interesting. We okay, so the president had made an executive order, which I believe when he came into office, his first thing was to reverse a lot of President Obama's executive orders. There were also legislators who said, you know, the President Obama had made too many. He overreached when he was using that power because, you know, the obviously the government shutdown did not work to anybody's favor, really. That didn't work as far as wanting to get that $5 billion that he wanted for the border. And he, border security, he keeps saying that Democrats don't want border security. And I have never heard a Democrat say, I don't want border security.
No.
I don't think I've heard. You think Democrats don't want border security?
No, I think they do want border security. I think it's a matter of, each side stakes out an extreme position.
Right.
And rather than working back toward a middle, okay, mm-hmm. They hold that extreme position, I believe. And so, look, the New York Times themselves reported that, you know, 76,000 immigrants who crossed were apprehended last month, highest in more than 10 years. It's fair to say there's some issues on the southern border.
Of course.
Can we agree to that?
Absolutely.
And can we agree that a nation has to at least be defined by its borders? You know, every country has that.
Partial, okay. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So we're a nation of immigrants, right?
Yes.
Legal immigrants, typically over the past. However,
except for the first ones,
mixed.
Except for the first ones. Okay. Yeah. But I'm talking last 100 yes. years. Let's say
since the Constitution. Right?
I am not for the fear mongering around immigration. I think, and I am not for deportation of people who are here undocumented unless they've committed serious crime. Okay, but I do think that we need to get a handle on some things, and I think, you know, Trump needs to drop the rhetoric. I don't like that, and I think that the other side, the Dems, maybe need to be a little bit more open minded to saying, you know, we do need to do more, and we need to take an approach that is compassionate, orderly, and respects the border.
But that is actually the position of the Democrats. That's certainly the position of Democratic leadership, is that we're fine with more money for the border, not for more money for the wall. Because just to be fair, as you just said, 87,000 people, it was the largest.
Or 76.
Lots of folks came through the border, largest number in 10 years. But a lot of those people came in points of entry. They came at points of entry. They turned themselves in. They said, "I want to, you know, we're going to, you know, go through this process." Right. And that's not about a wall. That's about better border security. That's about and so I'm in favor of better border security. You will find the Democrats proposed billions more in border security for things like technology and additional hearing officers to be able to process those people and additional security officers and all kinds of stuff, the stuff that actually matters. But that's not what the issue is. The issue is the wall, because it was the political campaign promise, which apparently was the political campaign promise that Roger Stone put in Donald Trump's head because Donald Trump had trouble keeping track of what his issues are supposed to be. This is what has been reported, that Roger Stone actually created this idea, and so Donald Trump started talking about the wall, and then he said Mexico's going to pay for it.
Oh, I have to. You guys, you distracted me with this conversation.
I have to go.
I'm late. More after this on 720. Stop talking. I'm going to put a wall up right here. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Sorry, Ken. We'll get to you after the news, I promise.
Ho, ho, ho. It's magic. You know. Never believe it's not so. It's magic.
Magic. Is it magic, Curtis, do you think, to not know what's going on in the world, to like not worry about people arguing with each other and just, you know,
Yeah, I could agree with that.
Yeah, there's some. I remember I used to go for walks in the neighborhood. My neighbor and I would go for walks, and she just didn't. She wasn't engaged. I would start talking about something, and she'd go, "Oh yeah, I don't really follow that." And then she started to follow the 2008 presidential election, and she was very concerned about reproductive rights. And since then, she has been involved and informed because she was worried that things might change. And of course. course, now people aren't talking about that as much, and that's not the topic for tonight. But I do want to return to our conversation about the President of the United States declaring a state of emergency, a federal emergency, when it comes to our border. Yes, sir?
What's reminding me of whenever I hear about somebody who's so excited about knowing nothing is, wasn't there a movie in a book, The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
I've never seen it.
I haven't either, but I think the premise was, you know, basically the guy woke up with amnesia and didn't remember any of his troubles.
The Spotless Mind.
Spotless Mind.
a lot of application for that.
Absolutely. Yes. Is Ken back?
I believe Ken's back. Hey, Ken.
I hear Ken.
I am back.
You wanted to jump in. We're doing our Finally Friday segment where we take on the biggest headlines of the week, and we've got in studio with us Dave Lundy and Deputy Mayor of Woodstock, Mike Turner. On the line with us is Ken Jakubowski. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. You're listening to 720 WGN. Just want to catch people up, especially those maybe driving through the area or catching the show for the first time. And we were talking about the president's executive order and the border wall. What were your thoughts, Ken? I didn't want to leave you out on that.
Well, and I say this with kindness for all. If the Republicans quit screwing around and finally get serious about border security, I think we can get something done in this country. The Republicans have been obstructionist on this issue. They keep talking about things that make no sense. The border wall being chief among them. The most sensible policy out there has been a Democratic policy, and that's been in place for years. The simple fact is the Democrats are not opposed to all walls. If there is an area where a wall is needed, fine, spend the money. The Democrats have said that. But the policy that the Democrats have proposed is a sensible policy. It's not a policy that's just designed to get headlines. It's a policy that's structured to actually solve the problem. And the Republicans just refuse to play ball, and they continue to just mess around with the wall. It makes no sense. No sense whatsoever.
Mike?
The great thing about perspective is that, you know, when you flip the words, the other side could there's people on the other side that can and will say the same thing. Okay? One of the questions I was going to ask, you know, you guys is whether you think walls at all work. And you just said in some places they do. And there's the beginning of agreement. I would not contend it's only a Democratic issue or Republican issue they refuse to compromise, although Trump takes, without a doubt, begins his position there, and that's wrong. Okay. I would contend that, you know, the leadership of the Democrats, Pelosi, you know, she's coming on air and saying there's no way we're not going to do this, period. Those are two difficult positions to start from. If you have no ability for compromise, it's win lose. And that's not how you get things done. If walls work in some areas, you know, then we need to investigate where they work. And there is nothing wrong with taking care of our border. Let's start with a premise of agreement and then work down from there instead of working from the outside and taking our positions and not having any chance to compromise in the middle.
But I think, go ahead, Dave.
There is the minor issue, though, that the U.S. Senate had bipartisan agreement for a comprehensive immigration solution that included tens of billions of dollars for border security. It was mostly Democrats with about 20 Republicans, and it was killed by the Republican House and Paul Ryan. It was killed in those days by John Boehner. And then Paul Ryan and then Ted Cruz tried to shut down the government for it. Democrats have had lots and lots and lots of examples of where they have offered. In fact, with Donald Trump over the Dreamers, they said, we'll give you, I think it was $26 billion. You give us the Dreamers. And frankly, it was a lousy deal for Democrats. But the Democrats said, yeah, we'll do that. And then Donald Trump quickly backed off of that. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. And I don't, again, I agree with Ken. I don't know any Democrats who are not in favor of strong borders, including walls. I'm pro wall. I'm just not pro wall from sea to shining sea and across the Rio Grande.
Yeah, I mean, where the border experts and the immigration and security experts say we need a wall, there should be a wall. I'm for anybody who, now Dave and I have a little disagreement on this. I'm a little tougher. And I do believe that the Democratic Party should be tougher on illegal immigrants. I mean, they're not undocumented. They're illegal. And illegal means adios. That's my view, whether you've committed a crime or not. Now, I don't think we should go around rounding people up, and I'm certainly in favor. The best position that we can take is one that the Democratic Party has had for quite some time, which is a comprehensive path to citizenship, which we could never get past. And in part, that's thanks to the extremists in both parties. We could not find enough common ground, and it's very unfortunate. There's no question that the kids should stay. It's a tragedy what's happening to them. But I think a sensible border policy is one that the Democrats have proposed continuously for years and years, and they've been stonewalled in Congress by the Republican. First the Republican majority, and now the Republican minority.
The stonewalling, you know, I'm going to agree with you in the past that's happened. I think there's a feeling on the more conservative side maybe that's happening right now. I mean, if you know, and you see the clips of of Chuck Schumer and others, you know, saying on the Senate floor how they support a wall. You see, you know, Obama. You see President Clinton talking about the issues going on at the border back in their day, and those things get I think Republicans can point to those and say, well, why aren't we compromising now? It gets to the fact that we take this extreme position and we're unwilling to find any common ground. And that is the essence of the problem in politics today.
So many texts.
Well, I think I say this quickly, Patty. I think the money and that is in the Democratic House budget for border security, if you take a look at the line items there, it covers A to Z, including some funding for existing walls and in areas where walls need to be enhanced. I mean, it's a tremendous security platform that the Democrats have passed in the Senate with very little help from Republicans.
I have to take a break here. We do have some texts coming in. I don't know if we'll get to them before midnight. We also have Jasmine on hold. We want to talk about some other issues. But I'll just read a few of the texts that are coming in. What's really sad is that he had to have an executive order to protect us. He should have just simply gotten the money by asking for it. I don't think anybody thinks that's necessarily
how
this works.
That's not how that works.
Yeah, that's not how that works. Mike, would you say that's not how this works?
Not how it works.
Oh, sorry. You turned your own mic off.
I did. Sorry about that. No, it's not how it works, and no.
630 says, kind of how the Republicans did during Obama era. They flat out said they would not support anything or cooperate on any proposals. I think we can all remember that. That was happening. The irony here from the 312 says, the irony here is that if these illegals were coming here and becoming Republicans instead of Democrats, the Democrats would build 100-foot walls. Oddly, as we were talking about a little bit off the air, if it wasn't for all the language and the rhetoric, I think that more Mexicans would actually become Republicans because they tend to be a little more conservative in many ways, including pro-life and family values and some of the things that the Republicans could appeal to them with, and yet I think drive them away in many ways. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time.
Okay, because the movie came out this year, it's Queen. Don't ask me what song.
You're
it is.
Very good, Patty.
I have an appalling lack of knowledge, and I do. I get very excited when I know a song. I'm like, ooh, ooh, oh, I know.
You're
this
two
one.
For two. You got Tom Petty.
Can't
and you
Stop
got
Me
Queen.
Now. Is that the name? Don't Stop Me Now. What's it called?
I don't know.
Do you know the name is nobody?
It's one of the two.
I've got to guess.
It's a good song.
Stop Me Now.
Don't Stop Any of Us. You know, we got to get Jasmine on the line. On the line with us is Ken Jakubowski in studio, Dave Lundy, and the deputy mayor of Woodstock. It is a Mike Turner in studio with us. It's finally Friday on the Patty Vasquez Show, where we tackle some of the biggest headlines of the week. And Jasmine wanted to join us with some thoughts. Jasmine, I'm so sorry that we got to you late. The conversation...
It's kind of my fault. I was sleeping.
No, I hope that you got some rest. I know we're on late and you're busy at school. And you had some concerns about some of the issues that came up this week. What did you want to share with us?
Well, I think I heard this story maybe Monday or Tuesday. It's about Trump's budget plan and the fact that he said that he's cutting the budget from programs that he believes aren't important, like food stamps and I think he said Medicaid. But the one that got me really angry was he has the audacity to say that the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, isn't an important government program. And maybe it's just because I'm a nerd and science was the only subject I actually cared about in school. But there's a lot of problems in this world and regarding the environment. Like, look at our lake, Lake Michigan. There's algae growing in it and it's killing all the fish. So there's research to be done. And it got me really upset when I heard that, you know, the White House is planning to cut the EPA's budget by 31%.
On top of the 38% budget cut of this past year.
Did you have any thoughts?
And also, if I could say my I have a little theory why. Because if the EPA can't do all their research, the Republicans can stop having the truth of climate change shoved in their face.
There doesn't need to be some resistance when it comes to talking about the science behind climate change. Deputy Mayor Mike Turner, do you have any thoughts you want to share on the EPA? And a lot of, I mean, like, we have, there's a place here in Western Springs where they had to shut down the plant because it was, you know, there were fumes that were coming from it that was, right, that's cancer causing.
So I'm cautious on taking a different position than Jasmine, one of your longtime guests, and I'm just a rookie, okay? So, Jasmine,
Jasmine's fired up tonight.
I'm only going to say this, that when it comes to things like you just talked about, you know, obvious, clear issues that are going on, you know, environmental things like that, that there should be no compromise and no change in budget. I will say that in my own town was affected by some of the increased regulation put on us around EPA and water, Army Corps. We actually lost the development because an old farm field had a 4-inch drain pipe running through it that was classified as a navigable waterway. Wait a minute, that's on the other side. I mean, we lost the development that could have gone in there and provided jobs and growth and things like that because Army Corps and EPA came in and said, you know, that's a navigable waterway. So there's no way we should cut things that clearly demonstrate that they save lives. And Jasmine, you know, it's good that you're passionate about that. I would only ask that we make sure that that there's a reasonableness test. Okay. And when you hear about the instance I just brought up, and I can show you a real example of it, that's frustrating for me as a resident.
But it seems like the answer to that is to address those issues rather than cutting spending to things that are important and can really.
More policy than cost.
Right.
Yeah, that's regulation. And look, bureaucrats sometimes do crazy things. And I think we could all agree that bureaucrats and regulators sometimes do crazy things. Just like insurance executives, health insurance executives sometimes do crazy things that makes us want to strangle them. However, that's not the reason to, you know, slash the budget by roughly 60% over 2 years. And what we're doing is, when you gut the regulations and you gut the budget and you gut the FAA and you gut the Food and Drug Administration and you gut the EPA and you've got all these agencies that keep our water clean and our air clean and our food safe and our airplane safe, and I said I wanted to get to Boeing, so I kind of eased into that one. That has a real world consequence, and it's worth mentioning that the Trump shutdown caused a 5-week delay in fixing the avionics systems on the Boeing 737 MAX, which had been identified and which they were working on with Boeing. FAA and Boeing were working on it together, and they had to halt that for 5 weeks. And it was during that 5-week period when we just had the most recent plane crash. This is a Wall Street Journal story, so it's not some liberal media. These things matter, and and I'm not saying you, I have some Republican friends who just like to slash and burn all of it and say all of it's bad, and it's not all bad. There's good and there's bad.
We have to take a break in a moment. I have to put Jasmine and Brian and Tom and Ken all on hold while we take a break, and I want to thank all of our listeners who are texting, and I have a few seconds I can read this. Patty, I oddly agree with all of your guests. However many times have they negotiated and the last minute Trump has backed down? Also, so far, the things we've seen from Trump indicate his definition of compromise seems to be pushing his opponent to the wall, then taking his bat and ball and going home if he doesn't get exactly what he demands. How can you work with that? 312 says, how dare you call the Trump shutdown? Had you just funded the wall, there wouldn't have been a shutdown. We've already addressed this. That's not how it works. More in a moment on 720 WGN. You can't make a unilateral decision or say, give me the money or else.
Constitution, Article 1. Congress has the power.
There it is. Friday, which means we talk about the biggest news stories of the week. In studio, we have Dave Lundy. He is the president of Aileron Communications and regular contributor to WGN Radio and CLTV. We have deputy mayor of Woodstock, Mike Turner, in studio with us and a good friend of the show and has been coming in for a couple years since we started Overbite Air. You were my first Overbite Air, I believe. Oh, we highlight communities in the Chicagoland area.
That's right. Yeah. That was great.
Did we lose Ken again?
We lost Ken again.
I blame you, Dave.
I put the button on hold.
We'll get him back in a moment.
I think he's doing it purposely.
He was blinking for like 3 minutes, and then suddenly he was gone.
I was going to introduce
him. Ken, call back.
You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and if you're Ken or anybody else, you want to call us 312-981-7200.
I object to what you just said.
What?
Because it's not finally Friday.
Oh, it's suddenly Saturday.
It's suddenly Saturday.
It's suddenly Saturday. Good point. Curtis is like, this show is weird. Jasmine, I know that you had wanted to call and talk about the budget and the cuts to the EPA. What are your thoughts on some of the other issues? Were there any other?
Yes. Actually, yeah. I'm glad one of you guys brought up the airplane situation with the Boeing MAX 8. I'm already scared of flying. I've never been on a plane ever, but I have internet and I've heard of some of the crazy stuff that can happen in the air. These engine failures and getting holes in the cabin. I don't even know how that's possible. But just the stories of these two planes, the same model of plane, crashing within, 5 months of each other, it's not helping at all. And can someone please tell me what a black box is?
Sure. The black box, first of all, Jasmine, the name of my company is Aileron Communications. Aileron is the part on an airplane's wing that gives a plane direction and lift. So I'll answer the aviation question for you. The black box is the box in a commercial, usually commercial airplane, some private planes that contain like all the information on what was happening when a plane is flying or when a plane crashes. But just to set your mind at ease for that time you do take your first flight, commercial aviation these days is incredibly safe. And what is so shocking is that these two flights that crashed are among the first commercial planes to crash in years, flying contrary to what the president tweeted when he said you have to be Albert Einstein to fly a plane these days. The flying is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly safe. There seems to be a technical problem with the software running these particular planes, but they've identified what the problem is and they'll have it fixed in a few weeks, and we'll be back in good shape.
And Jasmine, there was a time in my life for about 15 years where I was absolutely terrified of flying. My husband will attest, and we've got some funny stories about I would have near massive panic attacks. For me, Jasmine, it was the regularity at which I had to fly for work. There was no choice. Either I flew or I could not provide for my family and my occupation. And at some point, I was actually taking up to about 9 or 10 flights in just one weekend between a Friday and a Sunday just because of the small towns I had to go to. And Jasmine, I've been on everything from a puddle jumper where, it looks like they push the plane out of a garage. You can see the twin props outside your window. And
are those the ones that are like gliders?
I'm not sure what they're called, but
no, just a turboprop.
Turboprop, yeah. I have a joke about how it doesn't look like that plane's done. Let's wait till it finishes growing up. I was on a flight where it felt like every time someone coughed, the plane would bounce. I've become a very comfortable, and that's sometimes part of it. There are different ways to kind of fight that fear, ways to deal with it. But I have to say, I'm a very comfortable flyer. But I've been afraid to fly, and I'm very comfortable with flying and feel very safe. I That's really all I can say about that. So don't be afraid.
No. And quick question before I finally go, because I have my big cruise today.
Yay!
What kind of work were you doing where you had to fly nine to ten times a weekend?
So that was one. So I was on tour with the Bob and Tom Comedy All Stars. It's a big radio show out of Indianapolis, and they had we would go from like one day we'd be in Kearney, Nebraska, and the next day we had to be in Stockton, California. And the only way to get from those two towns is to fly a big jet into Denver, a smaller plane into Kearney, and then back again to get to Stockton, and then from Stockton I had to come back to Chicago. So there was one weekend where I did nine, I think, was from Eugene, Oregon, and I had to do a small town in Oklahoma. But yeah, so from that,
so you were going around like the Cubs do.
Well, I didn't fly as comfortably as they did. Yeah, I would say. Have a great night, Jasmine. Enjoy the cruise and happy St. Patrick's Day. I know you're going to see the river get dyed tomorrow morning. So get some sleep. Go to bed.
All right.
Right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I know Brian's been on hold for a while, and I want to thank him for that. Brian, you wanted to come back to the conversation about immigration and our border security, and we appreciate your patience with holding on. What do you want to say?
Well, you know, first I'd like to give a reaction about the budget. Now, we haven't had a balanced budget since the Clinton administration, and we have over $23 trillion in debt, and my opinion is that Donald Trump did not enough to cut spending. Now, I think the FAA is important, but when you have these large agencies that are extremely bureaucratic, you tend to have a ton of wasteful spending. And maybe we need cuts across the board or consolidation of agencies. There's no reason we need an NSA, a CIA, a DIA, an FBI. You can easily consolidate all these agencies that have similar missions and cut spending that way. He also should have been cutting spending with the military. But to keep going year after year, never balancing a budget, is suicidal. I mean, every year we have to pay interest on the debt, and a bigger portion each year goes to paying interest on the debt. And to say that we shouldn't cut anything is ridiculous. So I disagree with the deputy mayor there that you know, we never should be cutting spending for something like the EPA. Now, the EPA is important
to
me.
I don't think that was the deputy mayor. He's like, no, wait a minute. He was talking about how the policies did not reflect reality when it came to some of the issues they had in Woodstock and the ability for business to grow because of...
Oh, I heard that part. But before that, he was saying that, you know, we shouldn't be cutting... Am I right?
No, just a clarification. You don't want to cut down to the bone, okay? But I'll be the first to admit.
But a 2% cut is not down to the bone.
I know, and I'll be the first to. I'll agree with you that there's plenty of fat that typically exists in government at every level and every party. And the other truth, unfortunately, with budget cuts at the federal level, is that changing the EPA or the FAA and all that doesn't do anything to the budget. Because the budget is so massive on military and entitlements and interest that's fundamentally what has to change, you know. And we shouldn't do things that get to that bone, but we should be a lot more efficient in how government spends money.
Dave, you have a bone to pick with that bone?
No. I actually agree that efficiency in government is correct. The problem is that when you cut with too broad of paint with too broad of a brush, you wind up cutting the wheat with the chaff. You're right. A 2% cut might have been a perfectly reasonable thing to do with the EPA. A 38% cut followed by a 31% cut was not. And the other thing is that when we've been cutting domestic discretionary spending, and that means you cut things like investments, critical investments in infrastructure and critical investments in your colleges and universities and your research and your science. And so if you just look back here in the state of Illinois, we actually spend, less than half. Adjusted for inflation, the dollars in our universities, state money invested in our universities, than we did 10 years ago. And the consequence of that is that tuitions are sky high compared to other states. Students go out of states, they don't come back, and then we lose the tax revenues and we lose our economic base. So there's a distinction to be made between wasteful government spending, which, hey, I'm all with you. I've been on the board of three different government reform organizations, so I'm 100% with you. But there's a distinction between that and just, you know, just cutting, you know, slicing and dicing, no matter what.
Man, the phone lines are lit up tonight. Brian, we have to come back for the second part because I've got to go to a break. And then, Tom, I will get to you as well. He's got a question about Benton Street, Mayor, just Deputy Mayor. Oops, sorry, I promoted you again.
Yeah, don't promote me.
More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. Don't forget the call number. The number to call or text is 312-981-7200. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show on WGN Radio 720. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's actually a really pretty night out. I always feel sad when the Ferris wheel gets turned off at night, but it's very pretty at night. For those of you if you're curious about our studio, you can watch us on the live stream on WGNRadio.com, and we'll all wave at the camera and just pretend like we know it's you and we're waving at you. Hello, everybody. On the line with us is Ken Jakubowski. I was going to call you Kenneth. I don't know why, Ken. It felt very formal all of a sudden.
It is very formal.
By the way, the 406 says, fantastic show, exclamation point. We thank you very much, 406. And we've been talking about a lot of issues. I don't really cover the big headlines of the week until Friday. We talk about some local stuff. We talked a little bit about the college admissions, the fraud case earlier in the week. I don't know if we'll have time to get to that, but I wanted to make sure that we addressed Brian's other topic he wanted it to talk about. Brian, again, thank you for being on, holding on so long. What else did you want to talk about? I believe it was about citizenship and the path to it.
I don't think that there should be a pathway to citizenship. Anyone who came here illegally, children or not, they should maybe do a pathway to residency, but I don't think they should be able to vote. I think that, I mean, we got to have a rule of law, and at some point, I think it's unrealistic to deport everyone. Obviously, it'd be too much manpower and too much money, but I think that the most reasonable thing is to have a pathway to residency, even with people who aren't dreamers. And secondly, I think if we're worried about cutting spending, I mean, we really have to address the issue that the government has been spending about $132 billion annually to pay for things for illegals, you know, whether it be public school or healthcare. The government is footing a big bill.
Thank you. Well, thank you for your thoughts, Brian. I appreciate that. Are you going to the Southside Parade for St. Patrick's Day?
You know it.
All right. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Brian. Thank you. And have a great weekend.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you. Tom had something for our mayor, deputy mayor. Gosh, I'm going to get in so much trouble.
Yeah.
Man, you like glared at me. That was searing. That, like, I'm the deputy mayor. Stop calling me mayor. Tom, what do you want to say to deputy mayor Mike Turner from Woodstock?
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm talking about Benton Street, and I was against the whole project of you putting up those gazebos and all that stuff.
Yep.
And first of all, you said it was going to cost $50,000, which was incorrect, totally incorrect.
I think it ended up being around $60,000. I don't have perfect recollection on it, but I think it was around $60,000.
$61,000 for materials, not labor.
I thought the gentleman who did it did an all-inclusive price, but...
Well, I disagree on that.
Okay.
And then what happens to it then? You have to store it, you have to build it again every year, and it's coming out of TIF money. And I got an argument from one of the council members saying, well, this is just TIF money, like it's a big deal. Well, yeah, it's our tax money.
Well,
and
sure.
Why is it benefiting three restaurants?
Sure. So there's four that benefit down there. Here's my thinking behind it. And I respect your opinion because there's others that felt the same way. But there's also others that really like the amenity. Okay. It was $61,000 to start up. And ongoing, we don't spend anything. because the city staff, we spend staff time, okay, but it's not a direct cost. So they put it in and take it out. We think it's got a shelf life or a lifetime of between 10 and 14 years because of the materials that were used. So at the end of the day, the cost is around $4,000 to $5,000 a year, and it enhanced an area. We did lights and all that, enhanced an area that really needed some enhancement. And yes, those businesses get to benefit, just like anybody that gets a new road or a new curb or things the city does. You know, there's benefit, you know, that's not perfectly distributed. So, you know, I understand the argument on the other side. I'm not, you know, I think it is a positive thing for the community, but I get why there's, you know, there is some concern about spending the money.
Thank you so much, Tom. It was good to hear from you.
But there, that is the proverbial question in government, which is between investments that will pay long-term dividends and spending that doesn't. And, you know, I mean, I just think that's such an important distinction. You know, in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, we invested in an interstate road system that has served this nation incredibly well. European nations and Asian nations invested in high-speed rail. We didn't. We have trains that don't work so great because we didn't invest in them. That's how that works. If you invest more, people ride more. So these are the choices and the trade-offs that you have to make when you're governing, as the deputy mayor is governing.
It's all about balance. I believe this call is probably in reference to Brian's call. By the way, one of our texters wanted to let Brian know that he was the most informed caller of the evening. Most educated caller of the evening. And Sophie wanted to chime in as well. Hi, Sophie. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How about you?
Pretty well. Excited about the weekend. What do you want to say?
Yeah, me too. Well, I'm just absolutely flabbergasted that we are putting up with the continued separation of families and children. And I keep running across little things like, oh, yes, it's been this many months and the judge has made these orders. And, oh, by the way, there could be several thousand more children. Nobody knows because they didn't even keep track of them. They don't even know where they are.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
And you know what? My head explodes when I come across an Amber Alert for one single blonde child.
Or any child.
You know? Yeah. Or any child. But, you know, if those children were blonde, they would be back with their families by now.
Well, in your point, one of the interesting points that you're making is that, you know, the theory that Stephen Miller and Jeff Sessions had was that we are going to do this child separation as a deterrent to discourage.
Well, that's completely ridiculous.
Well, it is, but no, exactly. That's my point, is that as we talked about earlier today, you've got record number. More people came across the border last month than in 10 years. So clearly that policy of human cruelty is not working.
No, and it's not working that they're not doing background checks on people. So children and women are being raped. And, you know, it's just, there's an expression where I come from. It will not fit into my head, you know.
Right.
It certainly does not fit into my heart. Now, I will grant you, I am not objective on this because I'm an immigrant myself.
Where are you from? Where are you from, Sophie?
I'm from Hungary, and we left as political refugees. And we ended up in other parts of Europe for a while, but then it turned out that the United States had not yet filled the quota of political refugees that they had promised to accept.
And you qualified for that, right?
Yeah, we did, because I'm lucky enough to have educated parents and so on.
Well, Sophie, so one of our listeners, so some folks, there's a listener who says that they're using the children as leverage in many cases, and that it's their fault, the parents' fault, that the children are separated. They should not have come here illegally.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not, because they've separated people who are citizens from their families.
Well, they're not
doing the background work. But in any case, they're not even allowed to get a hug from their own siblings. They're not allowing them to touch. Remember all those studies with monkeys?
Right, about how important that is to have touch, right?
you've got failure to thrive if you don't have affection.
And just really quickly, because I know we have to go to a break, but the simple fact is that the families who are coming here that are being separated are not illegal aliens. They are asylum seekers following a legal process. And that legal process is being bastardized by this administration in a way that was not done by the Obama administration, with all due respect, 312 and the 806.
Because he's reading the text screen.
Yes.
I feel bad, Ken. I got to go to a break. And we're not forgetting about you. You're always welcome to just jump in, you know.
Well, no, I agree with just about everything Dave is saying. So I'm going to let Dave carry the water on this one.
And that is so rare.
Very rare.
Let's take a break. And thank you so much, Sophie. It was lovely to hear from you, as it was from all of our listeners, Tom, Brian, Jasmine, and our text screeners, texters as well. Continue to hang out with us. We've got What's That From coming up after the news. It's your chance to win a gift card from Apt Electronics, 312-981-7200. Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than time to play What's That From? We'll be reading a scene from a classic movie, and I'm sure we'll do it in a way that'll make it impossible for you to enjoy the movie the next time you try to watch it. But then you'll forget. It'll make you laugh, because we don't do a very good job most of the time. We do our best. But when you know
I object to that. We do a phenomenal job in our own special way.
We bring our own flair. And this is Deputy Mayor Mike Turner's first time playing What's That From? So welcome.
I look forward
to it. He's looking at us like, oh my God, what have I got myself into?
What am I doing? Curtis also joining us on What's That From? So when you call in, when you know what movie that's from, please, when you call, you will be in the order. Like, if you're first, just let it ring, because Curtis is in this scene, and then he'll take your call as soon as we're done. So hold on the line. It is your chance to win a gift card from Apt Electronics. Our good friend Steve Shapiro helping us out. All right, take it away. Oh, I guess it's me first. Is that right, Roger?
That is correct.
Daddy, we don't have to sell the farm. Hey, Deputy Mayor.
But no one pays her any attention. All eyes are on Mark.
Let us buy you out. We'll leave the house. You can live in it rent-free as long as you want.
What about the baseball field?
Do you realize what this land is worth?
Over $2,200 an acre.
Then you must realize we cannot keep a useless baseball diamond in the middle of rich farmland.
No deal, Mark. We're staying.
We don't have to go.
You're virtually bankrupt, and I'm offering you a way to keep your home because I love my sister. I've got partners who don't give a darn about you, and they're ready to foreclose right now.
Daddy, we don't have to sell the farm.
Karen, please.
Wait.
They all turn to Karen.
People will come.
What people, sweetheart?
From all over. They'll just decide to take a vacation, see, and they'll come to Iowa City, and they'll think it's really boring, so they'll take a drive, and then they'll drive down our road, and they'll see the lights, and they'll think it's really pretty.
Ray, Annie, and Man listen with wonder to this vision.
So the people in the cars, they'll drive up, and they'll want to pay us, like buying a ticket.
Mark looks at them, all as if they're crazy.
You're not listening to this seriously, are you?
Yes.
Why would anybody pay money to come here?
Karen looks at her Uncle Mark as if he were a simpleton.
To watch the game, and it'll be just like when they were little kids a long time ago, and it was summertime, and they'll watch the game and remember what it was like.
Ray and Annie couldn't be prouder of their daughter than they are right now.
What the heck is she talking about?
She's talking about people seeing their memories, touching their past.
People will come.
It'll be like one of those tiny French restaurants that have no sign. You find it by instinct. They'll be drawn.
Okay, this is all fascinating, but the fact remains that you don't have the money to bring the mortgage up to date, so you still have to sell. I'm sorry, but you have no choice.
He produces a document and hands it to Ray with a pen. Ray looks at it. He doesn't know what to do.
Ray?
Ray looks at Man.
People will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it, and arrive at your door, innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person, and they'll pass over the money without even looking at it. For it is money they have and peace they lack.
Just sign the papers, Ray.
They'll walk out to the bleachers and sit in shirt sleeves in the perfect evening. Or they'll find they have reserved seats somewhere in the grandstand or along one of the baselines, wherever they sat when they were children and chilled their heroes. They'll watch the game, and it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
Spellbound, Ray has put the papers down. Mark picks them up again. He is battling man for Ray's attention.
Listen to me. Tomorrow morning, when the bank opens, they will foreclose.
Oh, people will come, Ray.
You're broke, Ray. Sell now or lose everything. They're not coming.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a piece of our past. It reminds us of all that once was good and that could be good again. Oh, people will come. People will most definitely come.
Yay!
I have a great trivia question when Joe gives us the answer.
All right, well, why don't we give it to, we can give away another prize too. 312-981-7200. Is it a question, or is it, I can do a question.
Yeah.
I'll do a quote.
I'll give you my trivia, and then you can give a real question.
All right, then fine. Yeah. We've got listeners on. Now, Ken, don't tell us if you've seen this movie. Ken, you are not eligible to win a prize. So let's go to Joe. Hey, Joe, what's that from?
Oh. Gee, this is the easiest one you've had in a month of Sundays, Patty.
I agree with, for once on the show, I agree with Joe.
There you go. Joe, what's I like the echo actually works on this part. What's that from?
The Field of Dreams.
Woo-hoo! Congratulations, Joe. You've won a gift card from Apt Electronics, serving people since, making people happy since 1936. You can go to abt.com or visit their store in Glenview and say hi to Steve Shapiro. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks.
Congratulations. Hold on the line, and Curtis will get your information. I'm trying to. So what's your piece of trivia?
My trivia question is, how long did it take before Dave Lundy wanted to walk out of this movie?
Now, Ken, have you seen Field of Dreams? Ken? Oh, Ken, did Ken leave us?
No, he's on.
I know, but he's not talking to us. Now, do you like this movie?
I do like this movie, and I'm a passionate baseball guy.
I've been to the Field of Dreams in Iowa.
Have you?
I have.
Yeah, how was it?
It was cool. I sat on the bleachers, and I pretended like I was falling. The comedian that I was with, Sidney Adeniyi, had never seen the movie. But fortunately, Nick D was showing it at his movie club in Rosemont, so he was able to see it on the big screen. And I did get uncomfortable, to be honest with you, because I could see where other people would be either annoyed with it or find it hokey, or because I just love baseball. And when I
love baseball too.
I was
hokey?
Finished.
You think this movie was hokey?
I wasn't finished. I saw it with my dad, and my dad loved baseball. And when first it's the Black Sox, you know, obviously playing in the field, but then, you know, more ball players come, and my dad knew, you know, they only had their numbers, they didn't have their names. And my dad's like, oh, that's, you know, he knew, he's like, that's Mel Ott and that's so and so, and like knew who the players were. And then the next second, then Terrence Mann's like, oh, there's Mel Ott. Like, my dad was right about all. He knew who Moonlight Graham was.
Wow.
Before they say who he is, my dad turned to me, goes, I wrote this essay for the Fight Fair Climb. My dad goes, poor kid, he only got to play like half a game. And then they say it like a minute later. I was like, what? So that's my memory of it, is also kind of attached to watching Field of Dreams with my dad. But what did you hate about it?
I hate the scene we just read.
You hate that scene?
Oh my God! I wanted to vomit.
Why? They will come, Ray.
It's so
manipulative,
sweet.
Oh, here.
Manipulative.
But that's supposed to be.
Would you like to pour an entire truckload of sugar, or is that not sweet enough for you? Do you need to add like some Equal and every other artificial sweeteners? It's like saccharin, straight saccharin. I really really, I'm sorry.
There's an article called Why Field of Dreams is the Worst Baseball Film of All Time. But it's the opposite. It actually says
that's actually my pseudonym, whoever that was.
But their problem is more with the accuracies of the baseball story than anything else.
It's, I was okay with that.
All right, then. Ken, are you there? He's still on hold. He says, Ken, you can talk. All right.
Talk, Ken. Talk.
Talk. I don't think he is there.
I'm still on hold, but not, I've never heard anything for about 12 minutes.
Oh, he hasn't heard us.
You haven't heard us.
That's weird.
Oh, that's weird.
I don't know what's happening there. Tell him to drop the line.
Because I hear his static.
Yeah, we can hear your static loud and clear. The 630 says, I watched Field of Dreams last night. I know I called in a year ago and won an Apple gift card. I had to give you the whole scene because I said it wrong. Oh, I had to prove that I knew it. By the way, my favorite line in the movie is look out for in your ear. I love that line. I say it all the time when, you know, just expect the unexpected. You don't like the movie. Okay, 312-981-7200. I have a trivia question.
I'm a curmudgeon.
I have a trivia question about a Field of Dreams. Which ball player did Shoeless Joe Jackson say, we couldn't stand the son of a bitch when he was alive, so we told him to stick it? I believe that's the correct line. But which ball player was he talking about that they wouldn't let come play in the Field of Dreams? 312-981-7200 for a Lou Malnati's gift card. Which ball player did Shoeless Joe Jackson not want to let back? Don't say it. Do you know?
Of course I don't know. I barely watched it once.
I have a guess, but I'm not going to say.
Yeah, I'm not going to say. It's
the 815 has a guess.
One of my dad's favorite lines in the movie. I might be getting it wrong, but you get the gist. Oh, by the way.
Ease his pain.
I have to tell you, I realized something terrible about myself recently, Dave, and I think it's hurt my career.
Uh-oh.
I'm a gist reader. When I get an email, if it's more than a couple of sentences long, I start skimming it and I'm like, yeah, I got the gist. And then, I find out later that I probably should have looked more closely at the information provided. Like, you know, we'd like to hire you for a gig or something like that. And, I once got a phone call at about 11:10 and they were like, hey, are you on your way? We're just wondering what time you're getting here. And it was a luncheon that I was supposed to be performing for. Luckily it was only.
Yikes.
It was.
I know exactly what you're talking about because I try to alter email writing to make sure that I get some attention on the first paragraph because otherwise the scan begins, right?
Yeah. So you gotta shorten that stuff up. By the way, there's a study that says that people tend to respond more promptly to emails that are signed off with cheers, which I thought
cheers.
Was a little, cheers. Hey, Matt, cheers from Winnebago. What's your guess? What ball player was Shoeless Joe Jackson talking about that they didn't want to invite to play with them?
Ty Cobb.
That's Ty Cobb, yes. A pretty nasty ball player. He would sharpen his cleats cleat the, you know, second baseman or the third baseman. Yeah. Thank you so much, Matt. You've won a gift card from Lou Malnati's. Stay on the line so Curtis can get your information and send out that card. Yes.
One of our texters is concerned about Ken. They're saying, Ken, I hope he's okay. Maybe he fell asleep.
Ken, are you there?
Jasmine?
The 301 is worried about Ken. Yeah, I don't know.
You do a South Park.
Well, the problem is
who killed Kenny, right?
Ken says that he can't hear us, right? That's what he says the problem is. So we should, did you text him to tell him to call back?
Yes.
I bet you he fell asleep. That's all there is to it.
I don't believe that.
Yeah. But thank you very much, by the way. 608 says it was Ty Cobb as well. Unfortunately, we can only give gift cards away to listeners who call in. The 301 says, gosh, I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Now I got to fire that one up. What's baseball season? I will say I love Bull Durham more.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
I love every baseball movie more.
Except
Eight Men Out. I like Eight Men Out more.
Major League.
The Natural, Major League.
Oh, boy.
I even like Major League 2 better.
Ooh.
You know,
okay, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Do you all know right. what radio all host right. here at WGN is in Major League 1 and 2?
No.
312-981-7200. I have another gift card from Lou Malnati's.
Can I just say?
Yeah. No, you can't give the answer.
No, not that. No.
No, Roger's going to be
I
mad
just,
at me.
Because I chose this.
I love this
and
movie.
And I chose it because I love the speech.
Yes.
I'm sorry you think it's so sugary. But I love the speech. I loved his delivery. I love the moment. And for someone who loves baseball as much as everybody in that room and wishes I had the money that I could be at that ballpark every day, I loved that. It was everything, mm-hmm. even if you didn't understand what he was saying, But if you take it in the context of who the character was and the moment, it was magical. And plus, I wanted to read the part.
Okay.
So that's why I picked it.
Sorry, so, Roger.
That's okay.
I love that movie, by the way. We have listeners who have a...
You almost sounded like an uncaring conservative.
I know.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't get me started on Dances with Wolves.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm gonna take a break here. When we come back, we'll see if anyone has an answer to my question, and that'll be one of our Something Good. Tell me something good on 720 WGN.
If you don't cry when he has a catch with his dad, you have no soul.
You have no soul, Dave. More in a moment on 720 WGN. We are winding down and wrapping up and about to turn the station over to Matt Bubala. And looking forward to seeing him and listening to his show. Had a great time in studio with Dave Lundy and Deputy Mayor of Woodstock, Mike Turner. And Ken, we lost Ken. We don't know what Ken said. He tried calling back, but he could. It's all right. We have a listener who has a guess for which WGN radio host appeared in the movies Major League 1 and 2. Colleen, who was it?
Bill Leff.
It's Bill Leff. He's one of the fans in the stands with Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, for a while when Planet Hollywood was in Chicago, they had Bill's drum because they were dressed as Indians, and Bill's the one that says too high." I thought.
Yes, it was a very politically incorrect scene, actually.
A little bit. Yeah. Well, it's the Cleveland Indians, whole thing. Thank you, Colleen. Hold on the line. We've got a gift card to send out to you from Lou Malnati's. Sound good?
Thank you. It sounds great.
Excellent. And I'm so glad. It was so funny when I knew Bill. I think I met Bill after I'd seen Major League because he did stand-up comedy when I started out. It's time for us to share what is making you happy tonight at the end of the day, no matter what happens. There's always something that you can feel good about. Dave, do you have something good to tell me?
I do. So it's always a great pleasure when I get to watch my son perform, Eli, my older son. And tonight he was in his school production of Beauty and the Beast. Of course, he was the best part.
Of course.
So it just, it's just a great thing. I love to watch him have fun up there on stage. And he's a very expressive kid.
I love that. Roger, do you want to tell us something good?
Coming up Monday, our grandkids, grand girls are in the regional gymnastics meet.
Oh,
they will be performing the balance beam, floor exercise, the vault, and free all around. And I'm excited, as you might realize from the sports report, that my alma mater, Evanston Township High School, after 35 years, has returned to the championship 4A basketball game.
Roger, did you go to Evanston? I thought you were in New Trier. I'm so surprised.
Come in there and just
we're wondering about your fair and balanced sports reports.
By the way, I was at their last and only state championship in 1968 when there was no 1A, 2A, 3A, and 4A, and they won it all at the U of I in Champaign Assembly Hall.
Wow.
And they won all three of the last three games. They scored 70 points in each game, and they just blew away the competition.
You know, I'm afraid Roger and I are going to have an issue here because A, I hate Field of Dreams, and B, Evanston.
I'm going to hurt you so bad.
Wow, I don't know why we have to have
Seriously.
This kind of contentious relationship on.
We've got over 1,300 graduates of the class of 70 that are going to be in here in 2020. Meet you on the street.
Well, I will take my 1,326 grads of the class of 1982, and we'll meet you.
Of what? Where did you go?
New Trier.
1982. Yeah.
Well, but we're old enough to have canes. So there.
Oh boy, weapons. Deputy Mayor Mike Turner, you want to step into the fray and share your something good?
It's a good thing you guys are, elevating the conversation.
Yeah. So it's the battle of the short Jews, How can I tell you?
It's nice that we've grown up and gotten over it.
The battle of the short, balding, bearded Jews.
That sounds like bad pay-per-view.
No, that would be the sports battle of the short, balding, bearded Jews.
We could really go somewhere with this. Yes. But
tell us something good, Deputy Mayor.
It's... you know, it's almost baseball season, and this lousy winter is almost over.
Thank God.
And
12 more days.
It's time to move on to the next stage. And being here makes me happy. So thank you for the invite.
We look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
It was a great conversation tonight. My something good first, before I forget, I want to congratulate Colleen again on her Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Now I want pizza. Anyway, my something good is that I absolutely loved the opportunity and enjoyed opening for Jim Brewer, who performed at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. It was a great audience. I felt a little rusty, and the audience made me feel great. So thank you so much, everybody who came out. And so happy to find a new great restaurant when I'm out by Waukegan, over by there, Casa de Sammy's. It was Samuel. I'm like changing it. It was some of the best Mexican food I've had in a long time. I mean, I love a lot of Mexican restaurants here, but it was a great find. Curtis, before we go, tell me something good.
It's the St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Yes, it's wonderful. And that, by the way, the 301, thank you so much. Have a great weekend, you too. Happy St. Patrick's Day to the old Irish insomniac, is what they I didn't call him old. That's what he said. Let's take a break here and wrap it up and turn it over to Matt Bubala.